If you had the opportunity to speak to the health ministers and stakeholders at the 73rd session of the World Health Assembly, the policymaking and decision-making body of the World Health Organization, what message would you convey?
1 year ago, I traveled to Geneva for the World Health Assembly in my capacity as the World Health Organization Goodwill Ambassador for Sustainable Development Goals and Health. This year, of course, everything's changed. We're only meeting virtually. But I think this meeting is the most important gathering of global architects of any kind in modern peacetime history. COVID-19 and the global pandemic its cause has humbled us, humiliated us, forced us on our knees, and it's placed us in a permanent state of mourning. Mourning for the world we once knew and mourning for one another as members of humanity. What I would say to ministers and other stakeholders at this virtual meeting is recognize why we're meeting virtually. We can't leave our homes, we can't exit our countries, we can't safely travel to be together. And that in itself should ring every alarm bell in our heads. Put aside your prepared statements. Don't stick to the formula. Be imaginative, be creative, be bold and daring, because that is what this pandemic requires us to be. It's fast moving, it's very smart, and we somehow need to find a way around this so that we can get ahead just to catch our breath. I would also say put away your national interests, because even though this goes against every fiber of your natural being, we need to recognize also that this pandemic doesn't care if we only look after our own people, our own country, our own borders. It's simply not enough in a pandemic that is truly global and in a world that is truly globalized. So unleash your imaginations. Think of this not as a meeting, but as an opportunity to establish a vision, to create a global future that is fair, equitable, and kind. And with you as the architect of that in its design, in its curation, and in its construction.
The World Health Organization, like any other intergovernmental organization, is entrusted to carry out the mandates of member states. But should these mandates be expanded in order to allow WHO to deliver for the global community and its people?
It's a mistake to think of the World Health Organization as a building surrounded by trees on Avenue Appia in Geneva, but instead to think of it as what it is, something that belongs to all of us, something that belongs to you, something that represents almost 200 countries, and that stands for the rights of almost 8 billion people everywhere. That's the beautiful thing. And when we think of the WHO in that context, we learn to treasure it, to nourish it, and also to allow it to do what we've asked it to do, which is to deliver on health and to provide us with security and safety in a very, very uncertain world. We have entrusted the women and men of the World Health Organization to do this for us for over 70 years, and they have delivered time and again. 40 years since the end of smallpox, and we're now almost at the end of polio and Guinea worm disease, and much, much more. So why not we take ownership of this and have pride and invest in it in every possible sense, so that the WHO can work for us as we've asked it to do.
To follow up on the mandates of WHO, on many occasions, the organization has its limitations and restrictions when it does work. What kind of mandates do you think member states should expand for WHO in order to let it have the ability to do a better job?
I want to share a moment from my interview with Helen Clark, the former Prime Minister of New Zealand and former head of the United Nations Development Programme. She is a formidable states figure in our times and is giving us a steer in these desperate times on how we should be responding. She said that she knows that WHO is very poorly funded and that we can't expect it to do an A-plus job with anything less than an A-plus budget. So what I hope that member states will take from this experience is that we need to properly fund and fully fund the World Health Organization. There was a slogan that said, ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country. As I said, we're living in these extraordinary times with a non-traditional security threat. So this is a war of a different kind that deserves a battle cry of its own. And I would say this, don't ask what WHO can do for you, but first ask, what can we all do for our own World Health Organization?
Back to the World Health Assembly. COVID-19 will dominate this virtual de minimis meeting. There has been a lot of talk about the World Health Organization's role and its performance in the fight against the pandemic. What's your take?
I'm personally very proud of the way that the women and men of the World Health Organization have responded to this since day one. They have purchased and shipped personal protective equipment that protects not only us, but in particular our health workers in dozens of countries. Surgical masks, N95 masks, goggles, gloves, gowns, face shields. It's also provided us with information, the press conferences that we see every day online, the social media strategies, the ways to creatively communicate with different people who are online, and to make sure the message gets to people who don't have access to a smartphone, a power supply. It's built our capacity to respond. It's built incredible partnerships with all kinds of people and platforms that one would never have thought possible, with WhatsApp so that we can just type in a number and instantly we get the latest information as it happens, when it happens. Creating festivals with people like Lady Gaga and Global Citizen so that we can be glued together in beautiful solidarity, so that even if we are at home alone, separated from everyone that's close to us, we can still feel part of something and know that there is evidence-based hope that treatment, therapeutics, vaccines are on the way, because the World Health Organization is the global gathering point for science, for innovation, and for humanity.
What lessons do you think we have learned from this public health emergency of international concern?
There are so many lessons to be learnt and will continue to be learnt from this public health emergency of international concern. The first one is, it's not just a health emergency. It is an emergency of health origins that now has huge consequences of social and economic dimension. So I would say the one singular lesson we can take away from COVID-19 is that we're all vulnerable. We are vulnerable, we are fragile, we are broken. We can only move forward if we choose to do so with a unified approach. We don't have to like one another, but we do have to acknowledge and start behaving. We need to be together in this response.
As a goodwill ambassador, what are you doing to help WHO fight COVID-19?
Every goodwill ambassador offers a different value and role to play. And in my case, with a background in journalism, I'm able to communicate to people at this time, which is very confusing, and when the stakes can't possibly be higher for themselves and for their families. COVID-19 is not just a health pandemic, it is a health infodemic, which is being characterized by deliberate misinformation and also by cybercrime. I can't change the reality of that, but I can help counter the impact of that reality. Starting in late January, I began interviewing the people who are shaping the response. Margaret Chan was the first, a former and recent Director General of the World Health Organization, who led during SARS, Ebola, MERS, and Zika. Soumya Swaminathan, the current WHO chief scientist, who right now as we speak is gathering candidates for vaccines and therapies. Sharon Lewin, whose laboratory at the Doherty Institute in Melbourne was the first outside of China to isolate the COVID-19 virus. The heads of UNAIDS, the heads of UNHCR, the refugee agency. And speaking to people of colour, to understand the risk they are currently experiencing, speaking to people in New York's Chinatown who, despite the attacks against people of East Asian descent, are cooking and delivering meals to healthcare providers in the United States, people who are able to link together the challenges that we face.